Welcome back to our statewide conversation with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It's an opportunity to learn more about Minnesota's response and plans during this COVID-19 pandemic with questions from you. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your questions this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895 and leave a message there. I'm Heidi Holton, live from the KAXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We want to thank you for listening today. We are teaming up with the community radio stations of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you this COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. And joining us right now is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Thanks for being back with us today.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, we got a lot of questions to get to this week, and a lot of them have to do with education. But first, since the last time we spoke with you, there's been an announcement about the state's distribution of 4 million masks. Where do they come from? Who are they for?
Well, we worked in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and local chambers of commerce across the state to be able to distribute those masks. Because, you know, as we have the mask mandate in place, we want to make sure that we're not issuing citations, but we're issuing masks. And so that's been a great partnership. Folks have come together, have donated disposable masks or cloth masks, and we've been able to get those out all across the state. So that's, you know, been a really important thing for us to do. And, you know, certainly we don't want people to have to turn folks away from their businesses. And so this way businesses can hand them out to their customers and continue to keep building the economy.
Okay. Well, let's listen to a question that came in this week from Michael.
As a pastor in northern Minnesota, there's pressure to return to in-person worship, and yet I hear from colleagues in other places that they will not open their churches to in-person worship or activities until it is safe for everyone to return. How do you respond to this? Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for the question, Pastor Michael. This is such a personal thing, and I know that the governor and I both recognize the importance of worship and the place of worship to be able to contribute to folks' emotional and spiritual health, especially during this time. That's why places of worship are welcome to open should they follow the current reopening guidance that's available on the DEED website. However, you know, we know that there are many places of worship that have decided to stick with virtual worship because, as you note, they are concerned about the overall health of their congregation. So the decision of whether or not to hold in-person worship is entirely your own. But, you know, we know that anytime you can have virtual worship, it is safer for everyone. We certainly have heard of folks who are holding worship services outside, which has also been an option for folks. I have been to Mass once, and it was socially distanced, and it felt good to be back in the rhythm of things. But I have to be honest that I also was very aware of that we were in a time of pandemic. So would just, you know, encourage you to also have a conversation with your congregation and to just do things safely. And I also know that Pastor Michael, I assume that you are also having a lot more conversations with your congregational members that this is probably a difficult time for a lot of folks. So just thank you for the work that you're doing. And, you know, and we just want people to be able to take care of themselves. And clearly being connected to your faith community is part of that. We just want folks to be able to do it safely.
Yeah, let's stay on that topic of public gatherings. You probably saw the story in the Star Tribune today about a family from Lake Park who had a funeral for their loved one, and now there's been 30 COVID positive tests from that funeral, which adds, of course, to their grieving process. Your thoughts and advice about weddings and funerals and things like that right now? Because we've been in this pandemic a long time, and it seems to be getting harder and harder for folks.
So first of all, just the loss of a family member, I know very deeply, especially this year, and my deepest condolences for that family, and the added trauma and grief of the COVID infection spreading due to that funeral. I simply can't imagine. But what I would say is, I personally know how difficult it is to lose a loved one and then to not be able to have a funeral or memorial service that truly meets, I think, the way that we want to celebrate our loved ones. So I would just encourage people as much as possible to do things, again, in a way where people can be distanced, can wear masks, and truly try to protect our loved ones. I certainly have seen, and Heidi, I'm sure you have too, folks at gatherings. I saw recently a backyard wedding with not a lot of distancing and no masks. And, a celebration that you want to occur, but you don't want that sort of dark cloud hanging over if people do get sick when they come to, what should be a really joyful event of a wedding. So we want people to be smart. We want them to, we know that, just because you're over the pandemic, it doesn't mean that it's over you. And so, this is just a time to continue to try to be vigilant. We can get together, but we have to do things like wash hands, wear masks, and keep that distance. It's just really critical, especially as we have events where people may be coming from different states, different regions, and maybe exposing folks who wouldn't otherwise be exposed. So just continue to be vigilant, folks.
I was looking at an editorial from Dr. Michael Osterholm. We're sure proud to have him from Minnesota, and the world is knowing about his knowledge. And he's addressing that. Some people had been misquoting him about the use of cloth coverings, and he was clarifying that cloth face coverings are only one tool, but that will not end it alone. The key role is that physical distancing. And I think that's really hard for people. I think it's easy to think that once you're outside, you're fine, that everything is okay and you can be closer to people. Will you just kind of give us a reminder about how this affects not just if we pass on COVID, but how it affects things like reopening of schools in the fall?
Absolutely. So, and I think Dr. Osterholm has also tried to clarify too, as you mentioned, that, mask wearing is important. It shouldn't be the only measure, but it also, he worried that it would give us a false sense of security. And that was a couple of months ago. And since then, he seems to, has changed his tune just a little bit and wanted to elaborate with folks to say, this is a tool in our toolbox that we should be using. And some of the statistics that we have seen, that the governor has seen, that, if the majority of folks are wearing masks, right? Like, we have the ability to cut down on like 95% of transmission. That's incredible. So use that tool. And just again, just a reminder that this is really, really key in stopping the spread. And I cannot encourage people enough to practice those skills again of mask wearing, the physical distancing too, or social distancing, whatever term you use, or whichever term you use, I think is just, it can be hard, and I think we're getting used to it. But I know that I certainly have seen people on television shows or movies that have been shot pre-pandemic, and I continue to be sort of, surprised when I see how close
right.
people are standing or aren't wearing masks. And, that sort of just speaks to the moment that we find ourselves in. But Dr. Osterholm is a superstar. And now I think the rest of the nation knows it. But his guidance is, again, to continue to practice those good habits of hand washing, masks, and physical distancing, which will help us make it through this until we are able to secure a vaccine. We can really impact it if everybody's following the rules. even though it's a difficult time to do so, as we've been in this slog for several months.
Yeah, I know. I feel when I go to a grocery store, I can feel my blood pressure rise. I'm in a mask, and most people are masked, but if someone's going down the wrong direction, you know, in just a different sort of time, that there's a level of stress. And we've been hearing this week from people, it's been difficult because we had heard about the Effie Rodeo and the Minnesota Attorney General filing a complaint in Itasca County District Courts about that. And some people have been talking about that local restaurants or bars are not following the mandate, or even public spaces are not following the mandate that you would have expected. But I know people don't really want to narc on their neighbors or, you know, get someone in trouble, but it's also a bigger issue than that. How is the state addressing non-compliance?
So we have been increasing our enforcement, and I think that people should expect that over, you know, the coming weeks and months. I completely understand not wanting to, you know, to narc or call out your neighbors. But we are all in this together, whether we like it or not. And so I think it's just really, really critical that we do everything that we can to stay safe and, you know, to also let businesses know, or let folks know, like, I would like to come here, but I don't feel safe when this isn't being enforced. And that's also why we have handed out, you know, millions of masks across the state of Minnesota, to ensure that doesn't have to be an obstacle for folks. But again, this shouldn't be political. We should all just try to figure out how to do this together. And it is the way that we can keep the economy open, is by following these guidelines and rules. It's not because, you know, we like to have them in place. It's because we must have them in place in order to be able to you know, weather the storm at this time.
Yeah, we heard from a listener along those lines who had this to say. He said, now that people are losing the extra $600 they were getting from unemployment benefits, do you think we are going to see more people hitting the wall of financial problems? Are we just beginning to see the effects of our economy going down the tubes?
I think we can all feel this, even in our daily lives. And it is incredibly frustrating that the federal government has let this $600 bump to unemployment insurance expire. We know that this is going to put hundreds of Minnesotans at financial risk, hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans, I should say, at financial risk. And, you know, yesterday, the governor and I did an event in partnership with community action to let Minnesotans know what is available to them. And so there are many folks who have applied for unemployment insurance or for public programs that they might not have accessed before. And that's okay. We want to make sure that folks have, you know, access to help. It is there when you need it. And it shouldn't be something that anybody feels ashamed about. So you can go to applymn.gov, and it's a way to determine, you know, what might be available to you, or bridgetobenefits.org, where you just fill out, it's pretty quick and easy. It's just an online form about your current financial situation, and it will tell you what programs you are eligible for, and then will help you get connected to someone who can help you apply. So these are two resources that are really important right now. But I would also say nothing would beat the federal government doing what they need to do and stepping up and continuing that $600 a month for folks. And there is this sense or idea that somehow that additional $600 is keeping folks from seeking employment, and it's simply not true. A recent national survey shows that 7 out of 10 Americans who went back to work in June, so before the $600 benefit expired, were making more on unemployment than they did in their new job. So folks want to go back to work, and in Minnesota, we're hardworking folks, and so that is not, you know, that's not part of this. I think that the federal government needs to step up and help folks weather the storm. and help us get through this unstable economy. And I know that folks are scared, and we are trying to do what we can, again, to advocate to our congressional delegation, but also make sure that Minnesotans are aware that there are programs that are available to them to help with food and childcare and, health insurance or medical assistance, and that, there's a safety net here for folks if they need it.
It's Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You're listening to the Statewide Conversation. We're learning about how the state of Minnesota is reacting and dealing with this pandemic that we are in. I saw this week that the Department of Employment and Economic Development, is offering a free college course to those workers who have been affected by COVID-19.
That's right. And Commissioner Steve Grove, the head of DEED, has really stepped up. We've tried to connect as many people as possible very quickly with unemployment insurance, and feel like we've done a good job there. He's been incredible, but also looking at the additional opportunities, college courses, online and virtual job fairs have been really important, and we're also seeing a lot of folks who are participating in that. So I encourage you to go over to our DEED website and see what might be available for you or for your family during this time to help get through the economic uncertainty that COVID is providing all of us right now.
Well, let's move into some of the education questions that came in this week. Shannon had a question. She said, now that you and the governor have announced your guidance for the upcoming school year and how decisions will be left up to local school officials, district by district, what are you hearing back from them? I know there was a lot of talk about the complexity of the guidance, but do you get the sense that school leaders now have what they need to make informed decisions?
Well, we originally asked school districts back on June 18th to get ready for three different learning models. So one was in-person learning, the second was distance learning, and the third was a hybrid of the two. And districts have been doing that planning. And so right now we are working very closely with our school districts across the state, both the Department of Education and the Department of Health, to ensure that folks have what they need. Our priority was to recognize the epidemiology regionally, and that's why we took a localized and really data-driven approach. Districts have started decision-making workflows to ensure that their school communities are safe. Starting with the county-level cases over 2 weeks is a really important first step. So we're asking folks to look at that 14-day data in making those decisions. The other important step is to evaluate whether districts and schools can actually meet the Minnesota Department of Health and Department of Education requirements for the recommended learning model. If they can be in person based on the health data in their county, they also have to be able to still account for the ability to physically distance students and staff, cleaning regimens, and limiting non-essential adults. So I think it's just important to point out there's the data that is available in the community, but also individual districts and schools have to look at each school and each school community and make that assessment as well for themselves. The feedback that we've received, broadly has been just an appreciation of the localized data-driven approach, and the governor and I have respect for local districts knowing their communities best. We wanted to give them the best tools possible to make decisions. I certainly am paying attention to what is happening in my own district and trust those local leaders to do what's best for our kids while they also are empowered with information and additional help and support from the Department of Education and the Department of Health.
What science are you following, you and the governor, when it comes to age groupings of kids? There's been some misinformation in the news, I think, recently about kids under a certain age not being immune to it. What are you using as you work with schools?
So our epidemiologists in the Department of Health have looked at a whole series of studies across the country and also across the world with regards to our youngest learners. you know, what they have found is that children under 10 are infected at a lower rate and pass it at a lower rate, both to other children and adults. And that we've also seen that the children 15 to 19 pass it at a rate that is very similar to adults. So we've tried to, you know, certainly use that data to make these decisions with regards to our recommendations for elementary learners versus middle school and high school learners. And so, you know, all of that information is available at the Department of Health's website, but that's certainly what we've tried to look at. And, you know, no one is completely immune to COVID-19, and I think of any age group, and we need to make sure that we are not, we're not sharing that, that information. What's really critical to know is that, you know, we're asking districts and communities to use the data that is available to them with regards to infection rates, and also, you know, to make the determination for families need to decide based on their own individual situation and that risk, what's best for their child. And it was important to us when we made this decision to just be really clear that if a student and their family prefers distance learning, that the district must offer that to them, and that to the extent possible, that that also happens for teachers and other staff. So, you know, that's what we've been looking at. You can see that in our recommendations, and, you know, it's just going to be really critical that folks pay attention to the infection rates in their counties and what is possible for their each of their individual schools.
Yeah, and I will say, as a journalist and being in the media, it is so important right now to not rely on social media for your data and for your news, and to just believe or share everything that you are seeing. It's a really dangerous time to be doing things like that, I think.
That's right. You know, check your sources. And I think while so many people are sharing information on social media, that we have to, before you hit that retweet button, or, you know, before you share that article on Facebook, check the source. This is a time when people are afraid, and I think that is when misinformation spreads more quickly. So we need to do what we can to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, and there are great sources out there, nonprofits across the country that are doing those fact-checking, and you can find that kind of information very quickly as well. So I want to get to a question we got from a parent of a college-age student. She said, "I'm getting ready to send my college student back to school. We sure know a lot more than we did last spring when I had to suddenly pick up my daughter from her dorm room, and she ended her freshman year online. But while I'm glad to have her go back to college and be with her peers, I have to admit I'm a bit nervous that all of those college kids will follow the rules, which they are promising to follow. Her school requires all the students make a pledge. And the college students are supposed to stay at school until Thanksgiving. It seems like a recipe for trouble, yet this is life." And she goes on to say, "How on earth are we going to get through all of this?"
Well, anonymous mom, I feel you. And, you know, even when I have my daughter 7, but even when I think about when she will go off to college, I get a little pang, you know, in my heart. So I can't imagine how you're feeling right now, sending your child off to college. So I have been impressed by how colleges and universities have been making really extensive preparedness plans. And in Minnesota, they continue to have weekly calls with the Department of Health to answer questions about their plans, developing testing protocols and a lot more. And so, but you're right, a lot of trust is going into those college students. Colleges and universities can only control their campuses, classroom protocols, dorm rules, takeout at the cafeteria, but we are really relying on students. And so one of the things that, you know, of course, as a, you know, mom to mom would just say, you know, making a plan with your child about what happens if they get sick, and, you know, that constant communication and making sure that they feel supported and connected is going to be really important. And, you know, it is going to be up to our young people to continue practicing healthy habits outside of campus and to schools keeping up with their protocols and plans. But Maybe it's, you know, it's me, but I have a lot of faith in our young people, that they can get this right. And they, frankly, as we are seeing infection rates increase amongst young people, it really will be up to them.
Okay, what's your dog?
That's Ruben, everybody.
I was going to say, what's your dog's name? We always appreciate talking to you. I know how busy your life is. And I'm going to give you just a little easy question before we go. We heard from someone who wants to know about vaccines, wants to know how far away we are from vaccine shots for COVID-19 becoming widely available.
So I think, you know, what we are seeing right now is that, you know, early 2021 is, you know, what I continue to hear and what the Department of Health continues to hear. But I also just want to, you know, tell folks that it is really important this fall that you get your flu vaccination. We do not want to see an increase in flu at the same time that we are monitoring COVID-19 and responding to COVID-19. And then just broadly for parents out there, vaccinations, our children are so important as they're heading back to school, and generally just making sure that we're staying on top of them to make sure that there are not outbreaks of additional diseases that you know we've been able to get a hold of. And just broadly, Heidi, I would say, you know, right now it feels like we are all in a group project together. You know, those group projects from high school, yeah, or college. And our grade is dependent on how each one of us shows up. And I can't tell you, you know, how many times I was, or maybe you were, the student who was doing all the work. So let's make sure that we're sharing this workload, getting vaccinations, practicing good hygiene, masking, physical distancing. This is how, you know, we're all going to get the same grade. And so this is really how we can do it together.
You know, we had someone ask about what grade you would give to Minnesota right now, actually, when it comes to COVID-19.
Well, I would say right now, B+, you know, but I would say, again, we all are responsible for this in this moment. And so, you know, what we do right now before a vaccine is available, and then knowing once that vaccine is available, we're all going to have to make sure that we get the vaccination. But it will also, you know, probably won't help in as quickly as we'd like. So continuing to hold up our end of the group project is going to be, as individuals, is going to be really critical. And I think we can do it.
Well, I hope you get some time with your family this weekend.
Thank you. I am my kiddo has certainly been feeling it over the last couple of weeks. So mom is taking the afternoon off, and we're going to go to the zoo wearing masks, of course, and practicing good physical distancing so we can have some time together. So I hope you have a good weekend too, Heidi, and to all your listeners. Thank you for just remaining vigilant and engaged in community and taking care of each other.
Yeah, thank you. That's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation, kaxe.org. And don't forget, you can ask a question of the Lieutenant Governor. Email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.